All right, everyone, after a very long hiatus, welcome back to the Euro Snob Podcast. My name is Alex John. Due to a lot of technology and hardware issues, I'm not joined by Ian Smith today. We were also scheduled to have our buddy Rob, but unfortunately we had some all sorts of technology issues, but I am joined by my good friend Billy O from Twitter, making his return to the podcast. Billy, how are you doing today?
Doing well, my friend. It's always good to get together and talk about the Arsenal, and looking forward to probably complaining and also talking about some bright spots.
Absolutely. And, you know, with the season starting tomorrow, we know a lot of you might not get to listen to this till after the first game tomorrow for Arsenal against Leicester. We are recording this on Thursday night, but certainly we thought this would be a good opportunity to kind of get into a season preview and kind of where things stand for Arsenal and for other clubs, and then, you know, get into some predictions later. But just starting with the preseason, from an Arsenal perspective, Billy, just kind of a general oversight of, you know, some of your, you know, key takeaways and what you saw, you know, players you liked, and is there much to take away from preseason these days, honestly?
I always think it's a tough measurement, even in, you know, American sports with the NFL. Preseason generally does not mean that much. It's almost who you think will mesh well together and what system will work best. So it's has those similarities. From this preseason, I'm not really sure I can take away too much. I don't want to overhype Nelson, but I mean, he looked pretty good. He looks pretty confident in a young player, and that's always something that, you know, good to have. And I liked getting Lacazette early. The hit off the post in the Community Shield, I just kind of think motivate him more. I mean, I like him. I think he's a goal scorer. I know not many people on Twitter. There's a little bit of controversy with people not liking him and liking him. But I like getting that business done early and seeing him progress, and he will score with time. Other than that, I mean, there was a couple of other younger players. AMN is doing all right, I think. I don't like Walcott's hair. Some people do. If it makes him play like Mahrez from a couple years ago, I'm all about it. But in the Community Shield, he just looked wasteful at the end, and I got some flack for that. And I understand it. I mean, I like Theo. He scores, you know, scored 19 goals last year, I believe. And, you know, I hope the best for him, but I'd like him to do it more consistently. And I don't know. I think that's about it. I can't really come up with too much more than that. I mean, there might be some things that I'm missing, but –
No, I think the first one you brought up, Reece Nelson, I definitely think that's an interesting one, because like you, I was pretty excited from what I saw with him, in the sense that he wasn't even playing his traditional position. You know, it seems like he plays like more of a natural winger for the youth team, but he was playing almost as a right wing back, you know, with our new formation. But, you know, just it's not even just that he's not afraid. It's like he's legitimately technically skilled. You know, he looks like he fits in at this level. And the fact that he's confident enough to take players on one-on-one, I think there's something to be said for that. And, you know, I hope that we use the Europa League as kind of a showcase for players like him. I guess my one thing with him, and I don't know if you agree or not, but like a couple summers ago, we saw Jeff Wren-Adelaide get a lot of hype preseason. And, you know, he shined in the Emirates Cup games, and everyone's like, oh, you know, this kid's ready to go. And he still could become a very good player, but just – maybe it's one of those things that makes you hold back on the hype a little bit.
I mean, I agree with that. I was actually thinking earlier when we were going to talk about like some topics and whatever and things that I wanted to talk about. The one thing that came to mind that was like the common denominator through all of the topics that I thought of was, I feel like I'm repeating myself. Like this conversation was had about another player like you just mentioned, or another time or another formation or another group of players and who was signed. And it seems like just there's always this Groundhog Day effect. And you're wondering like, is it just going to be the same thing? And then you temper your expectations and who knows, it could go well, it could not, you know, but I definitely think that that's like a common variable through it all.
Yeah. And you know, with young players, it's so hard to predict because, you know, preseason, like you said, you don't necessarily know how much you can glean off of that because not everyone is going full sprint. You know, not everyone exactly is exerting themselves, especially if you're a seasoned professional. You just go through preseason, just try not to get hurt, honestly. So whereas these young guys see it as a shot to kind of get their name out there. And, you know, so it's one of those things, you take it with a grain of salt. But at the same time, I'd much rather have a young player look good in preseason than not. You know, the other guys, you know, the other things you mentioned, obviously Lacazette, I think that's a great point. Getting him in early was big, just so he can gel with the team. And it sounds stupid to say, but like when you see the preseason training pictures, you see Lacazette smiling with the guys, I feel like those moments actually do mean something, you know. Right. For a new player coming from a different country who doesn't speak the language, you know, getting in and getting to know your teammates, I think there's something to be said for that, don't you?
I totally agree. I like his attitude, and that's the thing. I mean, it probably could have been difficult for him to come to a team, you know, I'll say it, that doesn't have Champions League football. You know what I mean? I could imagine that be a difficult thing for a person who is, you know, pretty good in, you know, the French league. And I think that seeing him come here and the manager even being French, like I hate to admit it to that degree, but having that language, you know, barrier kind of be broken, and then some French players, and then to see him settle with everybody. Like, I've seen him like fooling around with Ox, fooling around with other people, like joking around, and like you said, smiling. I like that. And I think he's going to try to really prove himself as well, but he has the skill set beyond a young player now to be able to probably actualize that. So,
and I think that's interesting, because he's been a guy that's kind of been on our radar for about 3 summers now. Right. And, you know, initially it was just like, oh, this young French forward is scoring goals. And, you know, obviously Wenger must know about him. And then last season, it seemed like one of those deals that was just going to happen, you know, just given that he had 2 great seasons in a row. And it, for whatever reason, it didn't. This season, you know, this past season, he had a great season. And it almost seemed like that was enough for Wenger to say, okay, this guy is a consistent scorer. Maybe he's not the superstar in the mold of an Mbappe or what Benzema was when he moved from Ligue 1, but he's a consistent scorer. He's not someone who shies away in big moments. Like, I saw his big game scoring record was actually pretty good, scoring against PSG and Monaco and all that. So, right. You know, and bringing him in, he's 26. So he's right in the heart of his career. And for a striker, that's probably the ideal age. And like you said, I think he comes in with something to prove now, just because a lot of people, as you mentioned, like on Twitter, are saying, oh, he might not be Arsenal quality. And I was looking at it, I was like, okay, of the realistic strikers you could get, who else would you have wanted, honestly? Right. And so I'll throw that question to you then. I mean, just realistically, given what Arsenal can spend, who else would you have looked at for that position that would have been better?
I'm trying to think. Like, I wanted Mbappe real bad, but I mean, whatever it is with that is with that. But like, to get who would be better with ease, nobody that I would want to get for that position. Morata, probably not. Lukaku, I mean, that he looked ridiculous in that game the other night. It was kind of laughable. So I don't know. I just don't think he fits the style. It's like all, like Giroud, we have Giroud, you know. So if he would stay, you know, and I like Giroud too. I'm trying to think of who else. Like, I don't think Dembele would have went anywhere, and he looks like he's trying to go to Barcelona. I don't even know. I can't even think of anybody to be honest.
And that's the thing. Like, the striker pool is so limited these days, you know, so I don't know necessarily who else you could get in that situation. So, you know, so I'm with you there. And so, you know, he's also a guy with great movement, great pace. He's a clinical finisher. You link him up with a guy like Ozil, who wants someone to run behind the defense, and Alexis, who needs someone who he can kind of link up with as well. And I think you've got like a pretty potent front three there. I don't see any reason why that front three can't be the best one in the league, honestly.
Well, yeah, why not? I mean, especially if he's staying. Like, everybody's kind of – I saw some writers put in Arsenal, can they finish sixth? And I'm like, you know, like, hey, I know it's not necessarily a finished cake, but the ingredients are there. And I think that front three right there with Xhaka even behind them. I mean, it's kind of almost like a spine, man. It's kind of, but even like extended, like I just think it, if they could all click, and you know Sanchez is going to be firing for those games because he's not going to have many Europa. He'll probably play in every Europa game, I better want to play or something, but I think they would kill it, man. That's why like I'm like, not six. Like, give him a more realistic chance than that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, towards the end of last season, I think we saw things starting to click with the new formation. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, it's just one of those things that was a temporary fix. But what are your thoughts on the, you know, kind of that 3-4-3 formation? Do you like, or 3-4-2-1, I should say. Do you like it? You know, what's kind of your takeaway from that? You know, where you have, you'll have, presumably, you'll have Lacazette and then Sanchez and Ozil behind, and then, you know, Kolasinac, Xhaka, Ramsey, Hector, and then, you know, whoever we have in the back, whether it's Monreal, Koscielny, Mustafi, you know, presumably.
Right, right. I like it. I think that in years past, and this is where that theme of like repeating itself came up. And I think like to your point about how he finally like saw Lacazette and was like, I'm going to take him over after showing him that he did so well over time. Like, I think that like he kind of made the change when he needed to the 3-4-2-1 or whatever it is. You know, I guess that's what it would be, or one, I don't know, 1-2. I don't know how they're going to run it. I call it 3-4-3 just because it's easier.
It's all the same, honestly.
It's all the same, right? Yeah, so, like, I mean, I like it. I think he made it. I remember one time, I don't know, with, like, Sir Alex Ferguson, like, something with the 4-4-2 or went to, like, with the Cesc formation of the 4-3-3, and, like, he didn't make a change that he could have in the league that would have helped him out. And last year he finally did. And I think he did it at the right time because it's still relatively fresh to the league. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like wasn't being done as much. And I think it's going to start to be done more and get old, but I think he did it at the right time. And that's why, like, I think Arsenal should get a little bit more credit with it, because I think that they'll do pretty well with it. I mean, they're quick. It suits a lot of their abilities. And to have three defenders, it's almost like it gives them in mentally that extra mindset, but you could put quicker people up on the sides and let them use their speed on the flanks. And Wenger loves that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because it seems to suit Xhaka and Ramsey really well, in my opinion, just because if you played our traditional 4-2-3-1, you have two central defenders and then you have Xhaka and Ramsey, and all of a sudden that's really open defensively, in my opinion, you know, because Ramsey likes to push forward, obviously, and Xhaka is not exactly blessed with immense pace, so there's a whole lot of openings to be found there. Now with that extra central defender, it allows Xhaka to kind of do what he does best, which is sit deep and dictate the play, and then just as importantly, it allows Ramsey to push forward and get involved in the attack, which I think he's phenomenal at, without necessarily, you know, causing a huge defensive hole. You know, my only concern with that is Ramsey's health, honestly, because with muscular injuries, you know, once you have a few, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I mean, everything I've read has indicated that you're more likely to pick them up later on as well. So I know with Ramsey, he's kind of one of those guys that almost has to be rested, you know, every so often, just so he doesn't overexert himself. But I guess, you know, then it kind of brings us to the situation of, well, okay, if you sit Ramsey, what do you do next to Xhaka? So I know, kind of bringing it to the midfield discussion, I know you've certainly got some thoughts on our midfield personnel as it is right now. And then, you know, we can get into, obviously, you know, potential signings, or if we are going to sign anyone, but just that midfield position beyond Xhaka and Ramsey is a little bit scary right now, isn't it?
It's very thin, in my opinion. I think it's very thin, and I don't think it's thin numbers wise. I think it's thin skill wise. After that, I mean, Xhaka and El Nene looked pretty good together as well. I think that could work, but you know, Xhaka is probably going to get a card accumulation at some point, I would imagine, and have to sit some games. And after that trio, who else is there? I mean, I don't think anybody good enough to start that would do a job. I mean, maybe Ox could go in on the middle, but then you're taking him out from outside, most likely. I mean, well, potentially not. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Elneny and Xhaka looked good in the Community Shield game, I thought. They looked really good, and Elneny was getting around, and he's not necessarily the most proactive player in terms of like playing a lot of forward passes, but he understood his role, and he allowed Xhaka to really shine, honestly. You know, Xhaka was man of the match. I thought the stat was he completed all 98 of his passes, which is incredible.
Insane stat.
And I'm just going to go on a little side tangent here. Xhaka, for as much shit as he took last season from analysts, pundits, whatever you want to call them, there's one individual at ESPN, John Bruin, who basically got off last season on mocking Xhaka and the fact that people thought he was good. And then, you know, we brought, you know, I think a lot of people kind of brought it up to him after that Community Shield game. He said, oh, well, Xhaka was responsible for Chelsea's goals, so what are you guys bragging about? I mean, guys like that with like an agenda against him, like based on one stupid red card that he got that, in my opinion, wasn't a red card. All of a sudden, that reputation followed him, and a bunch of lazy journalists kind of stuck with it. But I really think you're going to see the best of Xhaka this season. You know, he seems more comfortable. But to kind of what you were saying, if he goes down, you got a real problem because Santi's hurt for a while. Jack, I mean, honestly, I don't know what to think about Jack Wilshere anymore. And you know, Coughlin is just too limited. Honestly, you know, he's a kind of guy. Maybe if we need to close out a game, you bring him on. But other than that, I feel pretty uncomfortable when he's playing. But I guess, you know, with Jack, maybe there's people who still hold out hope for him. Are you one of them, though?
I have a soft spot in my heart for Sir Jack Wilshere. I tweeted, I don't know, a couple weeks ago that I really hope he does have a good season because I think he could fit that role really, really well if Xhaka were to go down. And even if not, I think there's space for him to play in the team. But he has to – it's the same thing as you mentioned with Ramsey. He has to stay healthy. It's a very, very difficult thing for him to do. And it's a shame because the guy went on is an amazing midfielder, arguably – better than Ramsey, equal to definitely, I think, at that point, when they're both on, they're good, but can he stay healthy? I just think they need to bring in somebody else, and I feel the theme again. I'm asking for a central midfielder over and over again, you know, every so many years, it just doesn't stop. So I Francis, I can't find a use for. I know people are going to bomb me for this, but I don't think he just serves any purpose. I'd rather put Wilshere out there hurt, you know, like, honestly.
And yeah, I think the thing with Francis is, and we kind of discussed this off air, is that if he's available, Wenger has the temptation to play him, which just doesn't make a lot of sense because he's the most not Wenger type player I think I've ever seen. You know, he was most effective when he played just as a pure destroyer, you know, when he played with Santi, I think it was like the winter of 2015, like that January onward, where he, you know, that 2-0 win against City, where he basically was just cleaning up the trash, you know, and any attack, he would clean it up and then get it right forward to Santi. But, you know, kind of as we've discussed, Santi was also playing the role of two midfielders at that point. And, you know, it kind of covered up a lot of his flaws. And now with the system as it is, I don't see a place for him, but he's not one of those guys who's going to get sold, in my opinion. I think there's a few other guys in the squad that do need to go. I don't like the term deadwood, though, just because, I mean, these are still people. These are still professional athletes who are playing at a level that none of us can. So I'm not going to call the term deadwood, but in order to clear the wages and to clear up the, you know, to clear room for potential players, who would you look at getting rid of, selling on? And kind of another question to throw at you is like, we've seen talk about like Lucas and Gibbs going elsewhere, but like that Arsenal are not lowering their valuations of these players. Do you think that's smart on the club's part or should they just kind of cut their losses?
To answer the first part, I think Debushi should go. I mean, I liked Debushi when he made that comeback after the first injury and then got injured again in like that first game he came back. Like, he was doing really, really well in that game. Like, he was showing grit, desire, good skill, speed. He looked really well. And then I don't know, he got hurt again. I believe it was in that same game. And I felt really bad for him. But, like, I just can't see any room for him, can't see any need for him. I think he would have to go. As much as I hate to say it, I think Carl Jenkinson has to go as well, even though he's Arsenal boy, true and true. He would have to leave. Gibbs, I like Gibbs, but, you know, again, I almost equate it to Theo in a way, but because Theo's a forward and can score, you know, at times, like, I think he gets a little bit more weight in that area to be kept. But, like, I haven't seen them progress over the past, you know, Theo a decade, Gibbs for almost as long. Like, I haven't, their ability has said that stay the same. So, like, I don't think that they've really changed what they do too much to a degree. So Gibbs, I think, would be one that I wouldn't mind seeing go. And, you know, like, obviously Coughlin, to your point, he would never, ever get sold or dropped by Wenger because it's just, there's something going on there. I don't know. But I wouldn't mind if he went, but that wouldn't happen. And realistically, I don't know who else. I mean, Perez is definitely going to go, which just baffles me. Like, I think he could be a massive use to the club. I think a lot of people disagree with me on that. I think it might be 50-50, but I'm in the camp of keeping him and using him because I thought he showed a lot of good ability last year and looks good this year as well.
And I think with Lucas, you know, I brought up the same point because I agree with you. Anytime he played, he looked good. If he wasn't scoring, he was assisting or creating chances for someone else. Yeah. But then people are like, oh, well, you know, Wenger only brought him as kind of an emergency situation because we didn't know if Welbeck was going to be healthy or not. And, you know, maybe so. But even if you buy a guy for an emergency purpose and then you see he can do a lot more than what you expected, why not find a place for that player? You know what I mean?
It's very confusing, but, like, it took him 3 years to bring Lacazette, as you mentioned before. So maybe he, like, doesn't think one season is enough, which is an odd philosophy considering the type of players he's bought before and the chances he's taken that have paid off for him in a lot of cases. He just seemed, like you said, like, if he wasn't scoring, he was setting people up for goals. He seemed passionate about playing for the club, which is a big thing for, I think, every supporter, you know, to show love for your club. Yeah. And took his chances. I just think Arsene got stuck in that mindset where he had to be loyal to people. And like I said, you know, Walcott just is an enigma to me because, like, the guy gets 19 goals, but, like, I can't remember more than one of them, maybe, you know, like, it's like a weird type of thing. I know what they are, but, like, it's not anything where I'm like, oh man, that was
yeah. You almost don't,
goal, you know, like
you don't remember 19 goals from last season. Like, I'm trying to think back myself. I'm like, when did he get 19 goals? I don't remember him playing that much.
That's what I mean. It had to be like, I remember earlier in the season, he was on fire. Like, but here's the key. When I see Theo Walcott track back and play defense and help out in the formation they were playing, I think, before the 3-4-3. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I would see him go back and track back, it seemed like he was creating his own luck to a degree and just putting in the good work ethic and was getting involved in the play, starting it from back there, running up, creating space, running in behind. And it seemed like, I remember him scoring some goals, but, like, I'm like, 19? I'm like, it didn't seem like any of them mattered because, like, we started so slow, you know, to a degree. And, you know, it's just he's a weird one for me. And it's like, if he gets sold, I'm kind of like, okay, like, if they got Lamar and Siri, if they got both of those, I would be in heaven. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's it kind of leads me to what I was wondering. You know, we've seen the signings that have been made so far, Lacazette and Sead Kolasinac, and Kolasinac has been fantastic. I mean, I'm really impressed with him. You know, not just because he looks so physically imposing, but he's just his skill on the ball. He's smart. He's a lot quicker than I thought he was going to be. Very intimidating. Reads the game well. And you know, he showed his goal, you know, on the weekend against Chelsea that he can get up in the air. You know, he's not afraid to mix it up in there. So with Lacazette and Kolasinac, I mean, you've made two good signings, but that's not enough for me right now for to feel like this team is going to necessarily finish any higher than they did last season. You know, have you, is the squad, assuming you keep Ox, Ozil, and Alexis, is this squad good enough to make top four, you think?
I say yes. I'm an optimist, but I just think that everybody is counting them out. It's not sort of like there's an agenda. I think Bruin is an absolute jerk. I know you mentioned him before. I was one of the guys that tweeted him because this obsession with Conte and this two red card by, I don't know if it was Moss. I believe it was Moss, the referee. The
first John time. Moss, yeah.
John Moss. So, like, you know, like I was like, dude, I'm like, you are like comparing apples and oranges here. I'm like, it makes no sense. And just the extreme lengths that they go to just prove a point with ridiculous tweets, like you said, like, oh, well, he caused the goal, whatever. Yeah, like it was crazy. But I think that they can make top four. I have my prediction, but I didn't know when you wanted to get into that.
Oh, no, we'll get into the predictions later. But just from a pure quality perspective, would you?
I think yes.
You think they're there? Okay. Now
They're going to make another. Not to interrupt you. They're going to make another signing. I think, in my opinion, I don't know if it'll come down to deadline day. It's still what 21 days away, I believe, from today. So is it September 1st or is it the 31st?
I think it's the 31st. Yeah. So, yeah. So about 3 weeks.
Whatever. So 3 weeks from today. Yeah. And I think they're going to pull somebody in. I think they know they have to just to kind of get it in. I don't know what type of player it is, but I think he knows he wants somebody in the center that can play center or wide and kind of like an Ox to a degree. You know, you can move him inside if you want. You could move him outside as well. That's why I'm hoping it's Lamar. I just think he just adds a little depth and a little bit of flair that I think they're going to need because Ramsey is going to get hurt. Wilshere is unfortunately probably going to get hurt. I don't wish it upon them, but it just seems inevitable. And if they don't, that's even better because then it's competition, it's rotation. And I really think that they have a legitimate ability. Said looks like an absolute tank with a rocket attached to him. I love him. I think he's freaking awesome. I love the passion. He's skillful. He's good on the ball. He's a decathlete, I believe. We might have to look that up.
It wouldn't surprise me, man.
I believe I read he was a decathlete at some point. So that, you know, he's intelligent. I definitely think skill-wise with one more addition, top four without a doubt.
And it's interesting. You mentioned a few names there. You mentioned Thomas Lamar and Jean Seri. Lamar for me would be such an awesome signing for a multitude of reasons. Number one, he's 21. And the upside with him is so huge, you know, because he can play on the left wing. A lot of people had said he can move to central midfield and be a really good player there. I saw an interview where he said his idol was Andres Iniesta and kind of they're similar in the way they play with, you know, they're not necessarily the most physically imposing, but they're, you know, their skill on the ball, their understanding of the game, quick feet. So, you know, to get a guy like that, and it would show that for elite young players, Arsenal is still a club of choice. You know, you saw that 7-8 years ago with guys like Nasri when he was coming from Marseille, I think it was. Mm-hmm. He was an elite young French talent, and Arsenal was able to get him. And I want to see that pipeline reestablished to the best young French players because look at the generation that France is producing right now. You know, with Mbappe, Dembele, Lamar, you know, Benjamin Mendy, all these types of players. And, you know, it's a special generation and I would hate to see Arsenal miss out on that. And, you know, I just think it would be a huge signing of intent, but I think Jean Seri would arguably be a more important signing because like you said, central midfield is a position of need right now. And I'm not going to claim to be an expert on watching Nice. I just know that people who have watched him more regularly than I have say he's an incredible passer, good on the ball, reads the game well, intercepts, you know, passes defensively. and just and was considered probably one of the best three midfielders in Liga in last season. So, you know, those are certainly the two that I would look at. I think Sarri is probably more likely based on what happens with Nice's Champions League qualifier. Another name that kind of came to mind while you were talking about kind of waiting to see how things unfold is Draxler at PSG. Just because, you've obviously seen this rumor about Mbappe potentially going to PSG. I would assume, and I don't know how financial fair play works, but I don't think anyone does. I would assume if you sign Neymar and Mbappe, you have to be getting rid of somebody, right? I mean, what would you think about Draxler potentially?
I like Draxler. I thought he was going to come before he went to PSG, but Big Vang doesn't seem to want to pull the trigger on him. I don't know if he didn't think his valuation was appropriate, which is probably the case, in his mind. But I wouldn't mind Draxler. Again, injury prone, it seems to be. He gets hurt here and there. But I think it could be a real possibility. I would take him. Versatile, quick, could shoot with either foot, pass. Pretty skillful, I would say. I would definitely take him. I don't know how PSG is going to afford, like, what they're doing. I mean, they're owned, you know.
Basically by Qatar, right?
Well, yeah. So, like, it's something that I don't think it matters too much. But who else would they have to get rid of? I heard Draxler was the one you mentioned. There was somebody else I think that they were going to get rid of.
Potentially well. Lucas Moura.
Moura, that's who it was.
Yeah. And of the two, I would take Draxler over Moura. Just Draxler's age and versatility and all of that. But, you know, given the signings we have made, we're coming off an FA Cup win. And actually, it's a good time to kind of get your take on where your mind was at when the season ended. Were you, you know, knowing that Wenger was likely going to extend, were you happy about that? Were you upset about that? And has your mind necessarily changed with how this summer has gone so far?
It's tough because I like the signings. I thought that if he could have got somebody like Lamar in or Sarri, I would have felt a little better about the summer. I like the lack of signing. The said signing looks to be very good for a free. Definitely good business there. When he re-signed, it was just to, there's articles coming out now about him saying that maybe his, contract situation caused turmoil to the team. I read an article like right after everything kind of got cleared that happened as well. And it's resurfacing again. And, that's a problem. Like, I don't understand like why that wasn't you're in control of that. Like that could be taken care of, you know, very easily, like, or you know, you're the manager, you've been doing this a long time. So I was kind of like, man, the club needs to go in a good direction, but there, I don't think available coach wise I would like anybody but maybe Carlo Ancelotti. Like that, I don't know if I would take anybody else. And I know that he likes Arsenal from what I've gathered, reading certain things online. I could be wrong, but that seems to be the opinion. I don't really think it's going to be too much different, but I think having another addition like Laka in front of Alexis and Ozil, I think that's going to make it really, really good in the EPL. I think they're being vastly underrated in the EPL because I think a lot of journalists think that they're going to play the full team in Europa and the full team in the EPL. And I don't think that, or like mix it up or arrest players. And I don't think that's going to be the case until they progress pretty far, if that happens.
And so would you be of the opinion, play your reserves in Europa?
I think you're going to see a philosophy similar to what he did in the FA Cup several years ago, where he would play a lot of younger players. It was almost like he didn't really care about the competition. There were articles about that back then. I think you're going to see that in Europa, but I think it's going to be a better mix. Like, I think he'll figure out a way to kind of mix people in depending on when it is, but I think it's going to be primarily players that are not in the starting 11.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense. And, you know, players like Rob Holding would benefit a lot from that experience, in my opinion, playing in those tough environments where, you know, the pitch isn't always going to be the best and kind of gritting your teeth and learning, and guys like Reese Nelson, and those are the games you can play Coughlin if you want, I got no problem with that. Or, you know, play Ainsley Maitland-Niles, you know, just don't, you know, don't risk any of your big names, honestly. Now, when you look at a lot of the other moves off the field, like bringing in Jens Lehmann as an assistant coach, there was that new strength conditioning, you know, I don't remember what his name was, you know, the guy they brought in from Australia, I think, you know, some of these off the field appointments. I mean, do you really read too much into that, or do you think those are going to have any tangible effect? I mean, they're positive steps, but I mean, when you read that, you're not necessarily jumping for joy thinking, oh, well, this solves it.
I mean, me, I thought Jens would have been a really good appointment for Emi Martinez to have a season under coaching at all. Like, I was very disappointed with that transfer. I know that's a little off topic, but it's connected to the point that I thought Jens would have been a good influence in a very different way for him to see the game and mature. I don't like, I think Ospina is set in his ways. I think, you know, Czech is definitely set in their ways. I'm not sure how much influence he could have on those, you know, his positions specifically. I think as a team perspective, I think he'll have a good influence. I always liked his attitude. He got people fired up. The strength and conditioning coach, I mean, that to me seems something that he kind of changes out quite often. And there's always different movements, it seems, every several years of this person, that person, psychology person, you know, comes in and all this stuff. I don't think that's going to have much of an impact. I think it comes down to Big Bang and how he sets up the squad and how he uses them in Europa, because I definitely think you cannot play them like the starting guys in both games. They're going to be exhausted. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you've got to prioritize the league. You know, obviously five teams are going to have Champions League football. And so, you know, that's a lot of mileage on those legs. And I think you got to take advantage, you know. Obviously not making Champions League was disappointing, but you got to go with what the situation is now. You know, the one thing I will say is tomorrow's game, you know, as we're recording this on a Thursday, tomorrow's game in Leicester is super important, because we've started the last several seasons with bad results. You know, last season we lost to Liverpool, the season before that, we lost to West Ham. I think the season before that we won, but then the season before that was the loss to Villa, if I remember correctly. So those lost points last year especially cost us. You know, if we got a draw in that game against Liverpool, we make Champions League, you know, and we went into that game without a proper squad. You know, this time around, it looks like Ozlan Ramsey might be healthy. Alexis is going to be out for a couple weeks. So, you know, how are you feeling about tomorrow's game, you know, with playing Leicester, a decent team? You know, they've obviously got some players who can hurt you. What's kind of your outlook on that game, and what do you think the score is going to be?
You know, the opening games are always – they've been difficult for them, as you mentioned, the past several years. The last game I remember that was of any kind of excitement was, I think, against Everton. They won 6-1, and it should have been 6-0, but I think Almunia let one in. I think that was in, like, 2009. Like, that was, like, the last time I remember them doing well. For the Leicester game tomorrow – I think that if Welbeck plays, I think he's going to have an influence on the game. I'm not sure if Laka or Giroud will play, but I believe that they'll win. My prediction is 2-1 or 3-1. I'm going to go 3-1 prediction, Arsenal win. Not going to be super convincing, I don't think, but it'll look good enough to get the job done and get the points, and I think that'll kickstart the season.
Hey, a win's a win.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, that's okay. I said I have faith in him, because I think that especially when Alexis comes back, especially when these guys get together and gel together and it's like mostly the same crew, I really think they're going to take advantage of those, you know, points off of Champions League teams. And I really think they're going to be able to, you know, stay more consistent in the EPL, and I think that's going to just totally start off a bunch of good stuff.
I like it. I like the optimism, and I think I'm feeling it as well. I think the first half of the game tomorrow is going to be kind of, you know, a little bit helter-skelter, just everyone getting their bearings. I do think Arsenal eventually pull away, and I think 3-1 is probably good score line. You know, I think I have a good feeling about Lacazette getting his first Premier League goal. I think that would be really huge for his confidence. You know, I could see maybe a set piece goal, and then I'm not sure where else we're going to get the goal. I could see Welbeck possibly getting one if he gets on the pitch as well. So 3-1 seems like a good score line, but, you know, kind of transitioning to some of the big picture questions, who would you say, you know, in the entire EPL, who's kind of been the best signing of the transfer window? Not necessarily in terms of money spent, but just in terms of value and the club they went to. Who would you say is kind of the best signing so far that you've seen?
This is difficult because there hasn't, I mean, United hasn't really, I mean, you know, Lukaku is a good signing. I don't really think it's the best signing. Morata, I think, is going to have a tough time in the EPL. He kind of reminds me of Torres in some ways. I think he'll be good, but I don't think it'll be, like, amazing. I'm really trying to think of who would be – City has signed so many players. I'm, like, trying to think of all the people that they've got going on. I'm gonna say Lacazette, man. I gotta go with Lacazette.
I mean, he's stepping into a good situation, right? I mean, he's right. Stepping into a situation where you're playing with two world-class attacking players, and a team that likes to play with the ball, and so I can certainly see him doing well. You know, just as if I were a neutral, I'd probably look at Salah at Liverpool. I think just having watched a lot of Roma games last season, I mean, he's explosive on the ball. I know he was at Chelsea, but that just never seemed like a smart fit for him under Mourinho. So I could see him doing well. I think Benjamin Mendy at Manchester City, the left back, I mean, he's fantastic. Just an amazing fullback, one of the best in the world, in my opinion. And Pep plays, you know, the way Pep plays, he's going to see a lot of the ball. He's going to get into a lot of good attacking positions, and he's technically gifted. He's athletic. He's dynamic. I really think that's a good signing there. Now, kind of transitioning to, you know, who you think is going to be, you know, the player of the season. You know, I mean, we've seen the last few seasons, you know, players like Conte and Mahrez and Eden Hazard, you know, a lot of players from Ligue 1. So who are you kind of seeing as the player of the season?
Player of the season? That's an even tougher question to predict. I mean, I think it'll probably come down to City and, you know, a surprise second team. I think you're going to see probably a lot from Ozil. I don't know if the English media will give him player of the season, but I think that he's been trying to score goals and he's been trying to get involved. I think he's been creating their role, and they're all at that age, that front three eventually, that'll probably put a good run together. So I'm going to give it to Ozil. I think he's going to score a little bit more than last year and get his assist number back up again.
I like it. I like you. You're feeling good about Arsenal so far. I like it.
I'm trying to, man. There's everybody's so down on them and been putting them in the dirt, and it's like I just think that there's going to be something good with it going on, but they need at least one more signing. That's what I'm going to stick to.
I would say, you know, I could see Kevin De Bruyne potentially being up there, just given the attacking talent that City has. The only thing that might stop him, honestly, is the fact that they have so much attacking talent. So you almost have to rotate all these players, you know, because you've added Bernardo Silva and Gabriel Jesus, and you already have David Silva and Sterling and Sané and Aguero. You know, all these guys have to play somewhere, and I'm not exactly sure how you do that. So he's one I could see thrown in there. Pogba, if he has a good season, you know, just because the way the media hypes him, I could see him getting into that discussion. Now this is a topic that you and I kind of discussed off air, but I know you were still wrestling with this one. Your predicted relegation teams.
My predicted relegation teams are going to be, I'm going to go with, what is it? Huddersfield Town.
Huddersfield Town. Yep.
Yeah. Huddersfield Town. Going Huddersfield Town, Swansea, and I'm gonna throw what I think is my. It's not really like a shock, but I think they're due for this. West Brom. I'm going throwing West Brom in there for relegation this season.
I could honestly see that happening. I think for me, I put Burnley in there. I just they don't have enough goals in that team for me to survive. And they're not, you know, they, I just don't see the quality, honestly. I don't, you know, I don't think they've made enough of a move in the summer. I would look at Brighton, although they've spent decently well this summer. So maybe, you know, they might be right on the cusp. So I would say Burnley, I would say Swansea. I think Swansea's in real trouble. If they sell Sigurdsson, there's not a whole lot else in that squad. I think they're in real trouble. And then, you know, I don't have a great feeling about Stoke this season.
Oh, wow.
You know, I just – I'm not seeing it with that team. I think they lost Arnautovic. You know, they didn't have a particularly good season last season. I'm looking up where they finished, actually. They finished 13th. You know, I could see them potentially slipping a little bit. The other team I might look at – I, you know, now that you put West Brom in my head, I'm thinking about it, honestly. But I'll stick to my guns. I'll say Burnley, I'll say Swansea, and I will say – I'll say Brighton. I'll say Brighton. Just, okay, you know, wow. It's just – I'm not too familiar with their team, candidly. I think the other two promoted teams, Newcastle, I think they have enough guys with experience at this level. And – Huddersfield, I like David Wagner, their coach, American coach, and unlike Bob Bradley, he doesn't get all the pats on the back, but he earned his way up the ladder, so I'm rooting for them to do it. But we're kind of moving on to the bigger questions now. Your predicted top four and predicted champion in the English Premier League.
I mean, I have my dream prediction, and then I have my real prediction. I guess I have to give my real prediction.
I think so. Just for partiality's sake, impartiality, I should say.
Yeah. So if I'm a neutral, I'm probably gonna go, and this is gonna be semi-neutral. I'm gonna go. I think City. I think Arsenal are gonna surprise people at two. Okay.
Okay.
I think after that. Probably United at three, and I'm gonna probably put Chelsea at four. I'm gonna go Liverpool at five, and I'm gonna put. I think I'm predicting Tottenham to finish seventh this year.
So you'd have Everton finish ahead of them?
I don't know if I'd have Everton finish ahead of them. I think a team might sneak in there, like a rogue sort of team that nobody would think of that might be mid-table-ish. I think they'll sneak in. I'm not sure who that is yet, but I'm definitely putting Tottenham at seven. I think they're going to have a lot of issues this year.
Now, when you say they're going to have a lot of issues, what do you kind of chalk that up to? You think just the way the squad is kind of – not falling apart, but they just haven't added anything.
Well, you get rid of your right back for a ton of money. That money looks like it's not being invested whatsoever. You put in a requisition to the FA to get the Wembley pitch shortened. That got denied. And now you're going to be playing in Champions League games on those stadiums and then playing EPL games. And the squad, I don't think it's really that that full. I think it's rather thin to a degree, and you're going to have a lot of guys playing a lot of games, and I just don't think they can sustain it. They've been on a high for a while. They're moving environments. It's bigger. The play is going to be different. The tempo is going to be different for them with that stadium pitch move. And they're, like I said today, I tweeted that they're forever in our shadow. They're in 2009 right now, building a stadium, going to a bigger, playing on a bigger pitch, you know, after a little while. And it's just, I think that they're going to have a real tough time, and they're going to shock people to finish seventh.
Yeah. It's interesting because we saw that story come out yesterday where Danny Rose was saying that he doesn't get paid enough and he knows he's worth more than he gets. And you know, that other players aren't getting paid what they deserve. And you're kind of starting to see a few cracks appear. Mm-hmm. And I think Tottenham's gotten pretty lucky over the past few seasons. Number one, that they don't get carded nearly as much as they should for how many fouls they commit. another story. And number two, they haven't suffered many key injuries. Harry Kane's gotten injured a few times. I'll give you that. But in terms of like major, like where they lose three or four guys at a time, they really have gotten quite lucky there. And to your point, they lost Kyle Walker. You'd have to think Danny Rose's comments put him in a little bit of hot water. You know, you wonder if he's going to stick around. They don't really have tons of quality backup for their starters. Harry Kane, look, I mean, he's a Spurs player, but we can both admit he's an elite forward. Sure. You know, Dele Alli, I mean, I think he can be a dirty player at times, but he's also a very good player. Right. You know, Heung-Min Son, another good player. Christian Eriksen, there's some really talent there. Dembele is a great player. Alderweireld, I mean, I wish we had him at Arsenal. So there's talent there, but I think to your point, like all the extra games, the pressure and the lack of a squad, I think it hurt them. So I'm kind of with you that I don't think they make top four. My question is, you know, if Liverpool sell Coutinho, I think they take a bit of a dip unless they reinvest that money, because they didn't get Naby Keita. It doesn't look like they're going to get Van Dijk. I mean, there's rumors, obviously, but if they don't get either of those guys and they lose Coutinho, I think they take a big step back. So I'm going to go with City to win the league. Just they've got too much firepower. I'm with you on Arsenal finishing second. I just have a feeling that we can push that race close, but I think City's got a bit too much for us. I put Chelsea third.
Okay.
I put United fourth. I'll say Tottenham, Liverpool, Everton. Okay. That would be my top seven, but we're both kind of going for City there. I mean, do you think it's going to be a close title race, or do you think they run away with it?
I think it's going to be a close title race, because the defense has gotten much improved on City, but I think there's still going to be a learning curve, and they seem to just always lose games that they shouldn't against lower opposition on occasion that kind of reels the points back in. I think it's going to be close for a little while. I think Arsenal will kind of stay in it till the end, but I think it'll just always be out of reach. But if a couple of good things can go in Arsenal's favor, I think that's where my dream side comes in and kind of hopes for that. Or if there's just an amazing resurgence of a player that we didn't expect, whether it's they didn't get injured and they're having a great season, or a young person comes up and does well, that's what gives me faith about them finishing at least second. So I think it's going to stay close. I don't think it's ever going to be too far out of reach, but it's just going to be out of reach enough.
And it's interesting, neither of us picked Chelsea to finish in the top two, last season's champions. And for me, you lose Diego Costa, and you know, Costa's a prick, but he's also a really, really talented prick. And
right.
He scores big goals. And he was a guy who scared me as an opposition fan that we had to play against him. I like Morata. I like his game. I think he's a really skilled player, but he's never been the guy at a club. You know, he's always either been backup to Benzema, or when he was at Juventus, he had Tevez playing alongside Tevez. He's never really been the primary goal scorer. And I don't think Chelsea have done enough business to kind of stay at the top. You know, I think that Bakayoko, Kante midfield is going to be good. You're certainly going to have a lot of possession with those two, because Kante is able to break up play, and Bakayoko is really good on the ball and getting forward. But, you know, what's kind of your thinking with not having Chelsea up there in that top two?
I think losing Diego Costa is a pretty big deal for them. It just seems Conte is I think the midfield is going to be good. I just losing Diego, I didn't look like in the Community Shield, like the coach, like he had any control or pleasure coaching the team. He looked like he was just going nuts the entire time. And just all these reports of him not being happy with the players they've signed and what he wants to do to the squad. It just seems like he's going to have a tough time coaching these players. And I think it's just going to cause some issues throughout the season.
Yeah, I could certainly see that happening. And there do seem to be some cracks in the relationship between Antonio Conte and the board. But, you know, certainly I think we're both excited to have the Premier League season back and ready to get into gear. And certainly appreciate getting your predictions on that. Now, just as we wrap up, I know there's a topic that's kind of come up over the summer here in the United States that I know you've expressed your displeasure in, and you know, for our American listeners, which I presume is almost everybody, the NBC Sports Premier League coverage has significantly changed in terms of what fans have access to and how they've transitioned from having these games on their NBC Extra Time to now a subscription service online. Why don't you tell, you know, the listeners a little more about that and kind of what your feelings are in not NC-17 language.
Right. So in basically Premier Pass, $50 service, you could stream it anywhere, tablet, phone, you know, any computer, anything. Okay. Problem is, it takes away the EPL Extra Time, which is a free service at DirecTV, which I have, and other cable providers, that you could get the games in HD. A lot of bars by my locality have, you know, this setup where they get these games and they have these games in HD, and it's easy to go to on the channel. It was free. I get it. They want to make more money off of it. But my opinion on the matter is, why charge $50 and not also give us that option to have it on the cable networks? Like, I understand you probably would have to, if they know you're making money, you would have to start paying them, and that could be a major expense. But if you're trying to keep the fan happy, like, put a bigger price tag on it and say it's an all-encompassing thing, like $100, $150, whatever, but you get it at your cable network, you get it on your phone, on your tablet, on your whatever, you know what I mean? Ready to go. Like, make it a full service thing. Don't take away one of the most desirable aspects of it. And now, like, if you don't have a TV at home that has internet access in it, like a Wi-Fi chip, like, you can't stream those games to a TV. It just inconveniences so many people. So I've gone on a tirade. I've gone grassroots with it because I am frustrated that you're charging people $50 and you're not providing a full service. Like, at least provide some sort of full service. You know what I mean?
That I think is kind of what has frustrated me, because from my understanding, there's, you know, I don't know if Extra Time is going to continue to exist, or if it is, like, basically there's going to be a significant number of games that are going to be kind of carried over the NBC family of networks, but there's going to be, what's the number? Like, 130 games are going to be on this gold Premier League pass online.
Yeah. And that means three games.
Yeah. And that means every team, at least, you know, even for a club like Arsenal, one of the biggest clubs in the world, you're only going to be able to access some of these games online. So you're paying your cable bill to get all these games you would normally get, and you're paying $50 to get a few extra games. So it is exactly like you said, where they are penny pinching beyond belief. And it's frustrating because I felt like NBC Sports' coverage was working the way it was, you know, where, you know, even if Arsenal wasn't on NBC or NBC Sports Network, they were on the Extra Time. And so I could still catch that game without having to watch it online after the fact. Now, all of a sudden, either I pay $50 or, you know, I have to stream it somewhere from some shitty site where I can potentially get a virus, you know?
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're going back to the stream days. I'm like, that's like a decade ago. I'm like, I'm streaming games on a laptop. I'm like, you know, like, in my house, like, trying to connect the HDMI to the TV so, like, it actually looks kind of normal, you know what I mean? Because you want to watch the game. It was insane. But if you don't have the capability to do that, like, you know, I mean, everybody may have a smartphone, I don't know, but, like, $50 just to get it on those devices and not be able to get it on your television is a problem to me. And I don't care that it's only, my buddy's like, it's only $50. I'm like, you're now taking away something for free, charging me, and also taking away my capability of watching it like I want to watch it. I'm like, that's like a problem, you know? Like,
exactly. So the net cost probably ends up being more than $50, you know, right, if you think of it in that sense. But, you know, I know that was something that I've seen a lot of discussion on over the summer, and I know certainly you wanted to discuss it as well. And I did too, because it was one of the things that frustrated me. But, you know, fortunately for us Arsenal fans, tomorrow's first game is on NBC Sports Network against Leicester. I won't be able to watch until I get home after work, but I'm really excited for it. I'm excited for this season, and certainly excited I got you on today, Bill. And you know, it's been a long time, and hopefully we get to do this a lot more during the season.
I can tell you that I'm really excited to do this, my friend. It was definitely a long time coming, and you know my situation at home, so I'm going to be very around to do these more often this year with a lot of time on my hands taking care of a little one. So I'll be around and pumped to talk about it.
Absolutely. And how can the folks find you on Twitter if they want to engage with you and interact with you?
Yeah, that's the big question is if, and the at is AFCGOONERO.
So that's AFC Gooner O, and you can find Bill there. You can find me at UF Gooner AJ. That's UFGOONERAJ. You can find the podcast at twitter.com/EuroSnobPod, facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. And you know, certainly subscribe on iTunes, listen on Podomatic, do whatever you got to do. Just make sure you listen, and you know, certainly shoot us any comments or questions you might have and stuff you want us to discuss. But Bill, any last words to the fans before we sign off?
I'm going to go with the positive vibe this year. Up the Arsenal, support the club.
I love it. I love it. That sounds good. And come on, you Gunners. But thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll be back with you again soon. Thanks.